Hey there, it's Dave Hompers, and we're on to week four, part two. And in this little presentation, I want to address a couple of things, really. I want to look at the idea of sleep deprivation as a physical injury. And I also want to look at what causes difficulty sleeping. You know, so if you're not sleeping very well, let's look at some of the main reasons why that might be, so that then in the action guide, you can address as many of those possible reasons as you can do in the shortest time frame possible. So one of the things that we mentioned in the last presentation was that BBC article that talked about the fact that we're a little bit arrogant about sleep and sleep problems. And I think if you ask most people on the street, maybe even yourself, until you watch the previous presentation, what you kind of would associate with poor sleep, sleep deprivation, you'd probably say things like, yeah, it would make me feel tired, affect my energy levels, maybe my mood. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to focus and concentrate, and then I'd need to get a good night's sleep the next night to kind of make up for that. But I don't think, you know, we realize as a society just how important getting a good night's sleep really is. And I think this is something that I want to really ram home to you now. And seeing sleep as an injury is one way to do that. Which, when I say sleep as an injury, of course, I mean a lack of sleep as an injury. So you'll remember the Hompers method seesaw here, where we talk about most symptoms are caused by a combination of too much bad stuff being in the body and not enough good stuff being in the body. So the bad stuff would be bad food, bad bugs, bad toxins, and then the good stuff would be a lack of good food, good bugs, and good nutrients. Well, we can easily sort of add in good sleep to the green side here, the good side of the seesaw, and almost use it as, say, a nutrient on its own, a good nutrient that we all need. Now, sleep loss is literally injurious. It causes injury to the body. And to understand the real importance of sleep and the reverse of the detriment of not having enough sleep, let's consider the statement on the next slide. And this was taken from a study where they were actually comparing the metabolic markers you see in sleep-deprived children versus those in patients who had burns. And it said, it's well documented in the non-burn literature that sleep is a modulator of metabolic and endocrine regulation. The endocrine system is your hormone system, basically. There are significant pathophysiological and psychological consequences of sustained sleep deprivation and sleep fragmentation. So what that's saying is that when we don't sleep well for a period of time, we have pathophysiological, that's disease processes, and psychological consequences as well. Now, in the report, the authors stated that a lack of restorative sleep is associated with excessive levels of metabolism, kind of a stress-based metabolism, the breakdown of protein in the body, weight loss as a result, hyperglycemia, which is high levels of blood sugar, strongly associated with the development of type 2 diabetes, reduced pain tolerance, anxiety, and then hormone and immune abnormalities as well. And what they did, they showed a series of markers, metabolic markers, comparing what changes in metabolism tend to occur in sleep deprivation with what occur in brain injury. And if you look at the table on the right-hand side there, you can see hormonal alterations. The catecholamines are adrenaline and noradrenaline. They're also known as epinephrine and norepinephrine, elevated in sleep deprivation and burns. Same with cortisol. And then some of the repair and growth hormones like growth hormone, DHEA, melatonin, etc., they were decreased in both the burn injuries and the sleep-deprived children. Then in terms of clinical symptoms, things like elevated glucose levels, elevated expenditure of energy, so a hypermetabolic state consistent with a stress state, catabolism, which is a breakdown of the body, and then reduced body weight, and then impaired wound healing, immune function, and also psychological and emotional status as well, impaired in both sleep-deprived and children injured with burns. And what they said was, this syndrome parallels many physiologic and psychological outcomes that are manifested during the acute phase following burn injury. So what we have is a very similar metabolic pattern, whether people have serious burns or whether they have sleep deprivation. Now, it might not be exactly the same. The timescales might be a little bit different here in terms of the severity of these physiological changes and the way that they manifest in health conditions. I just want to show you this study because I think it's really important to really ram home that if you want to get up the vitality scale and feel well again, the likelihood of you doing so without improving your sleep is pretty slim. The reality is it's not going to happen very easily. Now, it doesn't really matter how much fancy lab testing you do, how many fancy supplements you take and what have you. We've got to get a good night's sleep to improve our ability to fix our body. So this slide really just summarizes what we just mentioned, which is our stress hormones increase, our growth and repair decreases, catabolism, which is the body breaking down, tends to become dominant rather than rebuilding. We have problems with blood sugar, and our immune system, wound healing, and emotional status are all affected when we don't sleep very well. And this is repetition of what you've already learned, but I think it's important to just, as I say, really ram it home. Now, some of you will have joined this program because you have digestive symptoms. And I think it's also very important to consider that in the literature, there's a very strong correlation between sleep problems and digestion. Trouble is, we don't really know which is the chicken and the egg in many cases. Sometimes sleep problems lead to digestive trouble. Other times, digestive trouble leads to difficulty sleeping, and it's kind of a vicious cycle. And in a study that I found, they said, additionally, important early work has shown that the treatment of digestive disorders such as reflux can improve sleep quality just as the improvement of sleep may aid in the treatment of digestive disorders. So again, that highlights the vicious cycle there. And this diagram was from a separate study, but it was talking about GERD, which is gastroesophageal reflux disease, and sleep dysfunction. I've had a number of clients, because of heartburn and acid reflux at night, had to prop themselves up and sleep upright, you know, against the wall or against the pillow, because when they lay down, they have problems, severe problems with heartburn and acid reflux, for example, and that really disrupts their sleep. But I've had other people who, once they started to get a good night's sleep and get into optimal rhythm, not just with their sleep, but with their eating patterns and their eating habits, they found that their digestive symptoms just melted away. So there's a very strong coexistence between sleep problems and digestive problems, and we need to add value and make sure that we address all of this together, which is the purpose of this program. It's pertinent, now we know all the problems associated with sleep, to look at why sleep becomes disrupted in the first place. And there are many reasons. It's not going to be the same for each of us. These reasons can be physical, they can be psychological, they may be behavioral, they may just be the choices that you're making. With psychological reasons, it could be stress-related, it could be trauma-related, which is obviously a whole different set of problems. And they could be physical, it could just be some heartburn that's happening that's preventing somebody from sleeping. Now, all of these causes certainly tie in with the main body systems. We talked about the Olympic rings health analogy, where all the body systems are connected, and certainly lack of sleep, without question, influences hormonal digestion, immune and detoxification function. And so our kind of potpourri of different factors affecting sleep and then the consequences thereof are a little bit different for each person, from a person-to-person or a case-to-case basis. Behavioral issues are very common, and these involve things like eating too late, trying to digest food while you're going to sleep is not a great idea, socializing, you know, staying out late with friends and family, exercising too late in the day, which does raise stress hormones depending on the type of exercise. So if it's cardiovascular exercise, working on the treadmill and what have you, then you might find that the cortisol levels are elevated and that might keep you awake. Staying up too late, partying, work and what have you, bright lights at night, not taking care of your environment, iPhones, iPads, TV, there's a lot of blue light exposure from these devices, which I've addressed in a separate article. Poor sleep hygiene, which is also in the action guide. We're talking about how dark is the room, is it noisy, is it too hot, is it too cold, and what have you. Moving on to that, we talk about the environment. We look at the room being too light, as I said, too noisy, too much noise. Outside, it could be the partner snoring, could be the kids in the next room waking up and keeping you awake. You know, what is it in your environment that's keeping you from sleeping properly? And indeed, sometimes being exposed to too many electromagnetic fields, Too much electromagnetic radiation in the environment can also interfere with sleep as well, as can living in high-rise apartments that are further from the Earth, because actually being higher up isn't necessarily better, because we have electron exchange, and this is a complete bonus lesson in the course later on, but we talk about walking around in bare feet on Earth surfaces, grass, moist grass, beaches, etc., actually helps us ground our earth and exchange electrons, which can also help our physiology as well. And I have had some people reported sleeping problems when they moved from a second floor apartment, for example, or a standard house into a high rise. And they just found that they weren't able to sleep in the high rise. And we were able to get them grounding and earthing using specific technology. And then they started to sleep better. Stress is a big one. If you've got lots of things going around in your mind about your job and your school, exams, money problems, family, relationships with your spouse or your girlfriend or boyfriend, health issues, all of this is going round. When's the next money coming from? Oh, Julie's not doing very well at school. The grades are not very good. Is she taking drugs? Has she started smoking? You know, all of this stuff goes over and over and over and over and over, and that can cause problems with sleep as well. Now, I can help in those areas with a consultation. I can't really do it in the training program until I get all the materials together for a separate training program on how to deal with stress. But if you'd like some help with stress, please let us know, because I've got some amazing techniques that I've learned some from very, very, very cool human behavior specialists that we can help with. Physiological problems. Well, if you have crappy blood sugar regulation, as we've talked about in previous weeks, if your blood sugar levels drop too low, your stress hormone comes up. Your stress hormones come up and you wake up. So that's a physiological reason for poor sleep. Chronic infections or a toxic body, they can cause major problems with sleep, because the more inflammation you have in the gut from chronic infections or toxins, for example, the more cortisol will come up at night, and that's going to wake you up again. Chronic pain, obviously it's hard to sleep when you're hurting. So if you've got arthritic pains, shooting pains in your nerves, restless leg syndrome and what have you, all of which are associated with digestive function, if we're honest, well, they can keep you awake. If you have low levels or aberrant, abnormal levels of things like adrenal hormones and thyroid and sex hormones, that can also cause problems as well. For example, low estrogen in a menopausal woman can cause night sweats, and that can wake you up. And progesterone, another hormone very good for relaxation, low progesterone can cause sleep problems as well. Urinary and bladder problems. I've had clients who have to get up and wee four or five times a night, and that peeing is really interfering with their sleep, and we can deal with that through various methods. We have neurotransmitter imbalances, things like dopamine, serotonin, GABA. When you have high or low levels of these chemicals, that can also interfere with sleep as well. And finally, we have nutritional deficiencies of some of the calming nutrients, or the ones that are very important for brain chemistry and hormonal function. And they include things like B12, B6, folate, magnesium, zinc, copper. There are plenty of other ones as well. Now, clearly, there are many reasons why you're not sleeping well. In the action guide, I'm going to take you through a series of more than 20 different steps that you can take to improve your sleep, starting with the most basic ones and the easiest ones to implement, and then moving on to some of the more complex ones that very few of you will need, but are available to you if you want to take advantage of them. Most of the presentations so far this week, we've been talking about insufficient sleep or sleep deprivation. What I want to do now, I want to talk about sleeping too long or for too long a period of time, because they've actually found in studies that there's kind of a U-shaped curve, meaning that if you sleep too long or too short, then it's not going to be beneficial for your health. And so what this particular study said was that both short and long-term durations were significantly associated with obesity, with problems with mental function, and up to 14 days after the 30-day period of sleep excess or deprivation, coronary artery problems, or coronary heart disease, should I say, and diabetes. So it's not ideal to sleep more than 8 or 9 hours, in the same way that it's not ideal to have sleep deprivation as well. The graph is just easy to describe on here. So if you have optimum sleep in the middle at the bottom there, where the cross, the little black X is, too much or too little sleep to the right and left respectively, can cause problems. In this particular article, they were associating it all with weight gain, but it's not just weight gain, it's all the physiological problems that occur due to excessive or deficient sleep. Now, of course, there are some limitations with data collection in these studies. How do we know? Because a lot of these studies are based on how much people estimate they sleep, but it's not easy to estimate sleep. People get it wrong. So how do you know you've been sleeping 7 or 8 or 9 hours? There's certainly room for reporting error here, so we just have to take the data with a little pinch of salt. How deep were people sleeping? Were they getting enough REM? Was that actually factored into some of these studies that we're talking about? And what about the actual sleep period? Was it between the hours, ideal or optimal hours that we've been discussing, or were they sleeping in completely weird patterns? Because that's going to affect things as well. So there's a big difference between somebody sleeping 8 hours a night between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. and 8 hours or 9 hours a night between 1 a.m. and say 9 a.m. or 10 a.m., right? The whole pattern is different according to the light and dark cycles there. What about shift work? Well, shift work is important. Some of you listening to this presentation may actually work shifts. You may work nights. I'm not talking about shifting your day pattern slightly. I'm talking about working overnight. And the data suggests that shift work increases cancer risk, increases the risk for type 2 diabetes, increases cardiovascular disease risk, can increase digestive disorders, and may create something called shift work disorder, which involves headaches, lower energy levels during the day, possibly not even being able to sleep during the day when you're not at work, and then poor focus and what have you as a result. Now, it's not my intention to alarm you if you're working shifts. What I would suggest is you may like to take a step back, look at your entire lifestyle and work patterns, and decide if you have health challenges, whether shift work and changing working patterns is really something that you want to do for the rest of your life, whether you want to maintain that, or whether you may want to, for health reasons, start to look at some different alternatives. I have clients who are firefighters, paramedics, things like that, where they're passionate about their work and they don't want to change that, in which case we have to do the best we possibly can to support the body in terms of their physiological and metabolic upset from changing shifts from days to nights on a rotational basis. So you may want to take a step back and have a look at that. Obviously, I'm not forcing you to do so, but I do think it's fair to warn you and just raise your attention and awareness to some of the challenges that might go along with it. What they say about shift work in the literature, for example, are things like the desynchronization that occurs in circadian rhythms with respect to sleep cycles predisposes employees to coronary artery disease or heart disease, gastrointestinal disturbances, increased risk of breast cancer and poor pregnancy outcomes. Another study said shift work disorder is associated with increased risk of gastrointestinal problems, cancer, depression, heart disease, excessive sleepiness and accidents, and decreased productivity. So a pattern emerging again that shift work is probably not ideal for some of these issues. So just how much sleep are we looking for? Well, National Sleep Foundation suggests that 7 to 9 hours is considered optimal, with an average of 8 hours. There's some evidence that pulsed sleep may be as effective as long continuous sleep, but let's not get into that. There's an awful lot of information we've shared so far this week, and it's not over yet with the handouts and what have you. So let's not go into that, but there may be some evidence that you can pulse your sleep and get the effects that you're looking for as well. 7 to 9 hours is not necessarily an accurate enough recommendation, because if you go to bed at 3 a.m. and then sleep the way through, you know, 8 or 9 hours later, I'm not going to do the math now. Because my brain's fried, I must have sleep disorder. But it's completely different, wouldn't you agree, from going to bed at 10 p.m., sleeping through to 6 or 6:30 a.m. There's a very big difference. So whilst 7 to 9 hours is considered optimal, I would add in that it's all about rhythm. We really need to be looking at 7 to 9 hours in an ideal world between around 10, 10:30 and 6, 6:30. That would be optimal in my world in terms of my clinical observations and those of some of the people who have taught me everything I'm teaching you. So let's move on to a summary. We know that sleep deprivation can almost be considered an injury because it causes similar metabolic responses to those experienced by people who have burns. Many different factors can interfere with sleep. We know that too much sleep may also cause problems, so we're looking to get, in an ideal world, unless you're working shifts, 7 to 9 hours at the optimal time, which is between 10:30 and 6:30 a.m. So 10:30 p.m. to 6:30 a.m. the next day. Alrighty, so what I'd really like you to do, obviously if you don't feel you have too many sleep problems at the moment, this is all stuff that's just great information for you, you may want to share it with other people, but you may not need to implement any of these recommendations unless you really want to move on and optimize your sleep. What I want you to do if you're struggling to sleep at the moment, or you know you have some issues here, is really look at your action guide in detail. There's kind of a full version, and then there's just a very simplified bullet point version. Just try and implement the simplest, easiest recommendations to begin with, and work through to possibly using some of the more complex ones if you need to. You may find that just two or three changes to your environment, such as getting the room darker, wearing some earplugs, going to bed at the right time, preventing yourself from being exposed to too much blue light from your computers and your smartphones at night. Just those things make a massive difference. Maybe even adding a little evening snack that we talked about last week has already started to bring some benefit. I don't know, because I'm not working with you on a one-to-one basis, but all those guidelines and recommendations are there for you to add into your regimen as you see fit. And I hope you get the maximum benefit from them. Okay, so there are some more handouts with your sleep. There's a handout about blue light. I'd like you to read that, because it's really important in the context of reducing your exposure of blue light or to blue light in the evenings. And that generally comes from your computer, your smartphone, etc. Next week, we're going to move on to water and hydration. So important to get this right. Many people get it wrong, because it's not just about water. It's also about salt. And it's also about sodium and potassium. It's about when you drink as well as what you drink. And it's about how much you drink according to your body weight. And so we're going to cover all of that next week and get your water and hydration habits optimized. Please make sure, as always, that you join the live calls and the Facebook group discussion. Anything you'd like to see improved, drop us a line. And we will make as many changes as we need to make your journey as smooth and as efficient as possible. I'm Dave Hompers, as you probably know by now, and I can't wait to see you next week when we're talking about water and hydration. Cheers for now.